This is an interview with Vivian Sheriffs. The interview was conducted by Michael Telsrow on March 13, 1995, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's oral history project entitled The Forgotten Champs, The Milwaukee Chicks of 1944. Tape 1, Side 1.
Could you tell me where you were born?
Right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Milwaukee General Hospital.
And your father, what kind of work did he do?
My dad was a finance manager for Uptown Lincoln Mercury right over here on Highway 100, Automobile.
Did your mother work?
Yes, my mother was a head of first storage and alteration at Gimbel Brothers.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
No. I can qualify that by saying that at the year that I was born, things were not at the best level financially.
And what year was that?
1921.
Can you tell me a little bit about your education?
I'm a high school graduate. I graduated from West Division High School and spent most of my high school years in Wauwatosa.
Any secondary, further education after high school?
None. Street smarts is about it.
And as a child, did you have many hobbies?
Not basically. I was always involved in sports. I played hockey, basketball, football, of course, until mother put the on that, and baseball.
So your mother discouraged you from being involved in football?
She decided that it was a boy's game and should not. Normally when you start growing up, it's not a good idea. I have to go along with her on that.
But she had no no problem with baseball?
No, not until the last years when, of course, after I broke my fingers, and then I went to Chicago and played ball and proceeded to get 3 shiners in a row, which my parents happened to come and find out about them. They weren't too happy about that. I've been a tomboy all my life. This is what it's all about.
How about your family social life? Were they also involved in athletics?
No, not really. It's hard to explain. My dad was very, very much involved business all the way. My mother was kind of a social person. She liked her card playing. She liked her friends. And strictly outdoor stuff, like doing the yards and things like this. This was her bag. And very much down to earth and a very modern woman, considering what her age was.
So they were also natives of Milwaukee?
Yes.
And no brothers and no sisters?
Mm-hmm. What you see is what you get.
Any special memories that you can recall from your childhood?
No, it was pretty normal. My parents were quite open, and we discussed things, and I never had any qualms about talking to my mother. My father was a little bit more difficult to speak to because he had his mind turned to his business, things like that. We're a very work-oriented family. All 3 of us have been, and I still am.
Okay. Could you describe your first job?
First job? Oh, yes, I certainly can. My mother and my aunt both were employees of Gimbel Brothers. So I decided I should go to Gimbel Brothers and try to get a job. And I worked in the credit and collection department, which typical because I had worked for my dad when he had his own finance business.
I
just continued on that basis.
Did you enjoy working for Gimbel's?
Yeah, I did. I actually left there because they didn't give my boss lady a raise. They gave me one, didn't give her one. And I didn't think that was nice, so I decided to leave.
What did she say about that?
She was shocked.
Any other jobs during high school or after high school?
Just like I said, I worked for my dad, then I went to Gimbel Brothers, right? 2 days after I graduated, I went to Gimbel's. I worked there, and then I went to Let me see, where did I go? My goodness, I kind of flitted around in very sundry different places. Basically all office work.
Clerical.
I'm private secretary. I've dealt with credits and collections. I've been an office manager. You name it. I think I've even repaired machines on occasions.
Really? What kind of machines?
Office. Typewriters and all that good stuff. They go haywire and play around with them. Of course, I always ended up with more parts than when I started out with them, but that was neither here nor there.
Well, I'm curious how you became interested in baseball.
I really can't tell you that. It was just, I watched baseball, watched the girls' baseball a lot. Then I think when I was 14 or 15, watching baseball and expressing kind of an interest in it. And as I said, I'm a tomboy. So anything I was involved in obviously had something to do with being very much on the male side of the platter.
When you first got interested in baseball, did you have any idea that you might one day make some money playing?
Absolutely not. It was pure and simple a sport for me.
That's fun.
Even when I was playing regular baseball, getting paid for it, it was still a sport. The money part of it, that didn't faze me. I never had a lot of money, so why should I worry about it at that point?
Did you play in any neighborhood or company leagues before joining the Milwaukee Chicks?
I played for out in West Dallas, which is kind of the home of girls baseball. Several of my friends and I, which a couple of them did turn out to be Rockford Peaches, obviously. We just started playing. I played for Zimmer's Sausages. I played for Roar Jewelers. I played for Medecky Foods.
And these were all sponsored by local businesses?
Yes, local business people, exactly.
And there was no remuneration, no pay involved?
No, absolutely not.
Did you follow the major leagues, men's professional baseball?
Not to a great extent. When I was growing up and playing baseball, of course, it wasn't like it is nowadays, obviously, where everybody's out for money, and which I suppose I can't blame them in the long run. But the ethics of playing baseball were far different. I mean, we didn't care if we went out there. I ended up in the grandstand on my nose a couple of times and things like that. That never bothered me. It was part of the game. And it still is and will be a game to me.
Did the start of World War II affect your life?
Well, at that time I was married. My husband was in service. When I was approached on this thing, the most remote thing I ever heard of, because like I said, I was never a star. I just played hard, did the best I could. The only changing around it did, I guess, in my life was that I had made a lot of new friends with the girls on the pro team from out of town. It was kind of a new world to me.
You mentioned your husband was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
What branch of service?
Army.
Did he serve in combat?
No. He was in the motor pool, and then he became a baker. Don't ask me why, but that's the way it was. He was in Germany for just a short while.
What was his name?
Daniel Anderson. Which is why, of course, I had the name of Anderson.
Did you have any children?
No. Well, he was in service most of the time of the 4 years that we were married.
So, at the start of World War II, you were working for Gimbel's, was it?
No, at that time I was working for, was it E.S. Schmidt Company? One or the other. I went E.S. Schmidt Company. I was A.O. Smith sometime during the war years, but that was one of those very pious situations where if you needed a red pencil, you had to turn in the stub and all that good stuff, because that absolutely was into the military.
Did you notice an increase in employment opportunities for women?
Oh, definitely. A lot of my friends went into various industrial manufacturing companies and became quite adept at it.
Did they manage to keep their jobs after the war?
Yes, quite a few of them did. They were that good that they did.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the baseball league. Where did you hear about the tryouts?
We were sent a letter. I don't know if this was a scouting venture or whatever. It must have been, obviously, or they wouldn't know you were in existence. And received a letter that if we were interested, fill out the form and send it to them, and they would be in contact with us, which is precisely the way it happened.
And when you did that, what was the family reaction?
Oh, my mom was tickled pink, and I guess my dad was in a little way. I think my dad always wanted a boy, so it was probably that situation, but he didn't go gung-ho because I was still a girl no matter which way it worked. But basically quite supportive, I would say.
And were you recruited to try out outside
yeah.
of the
Yeah,
rooms?
We were sent to the training camp in Peru, LaSalle, Illinois.
Do you remember who contacted you?
No, offhand that I can't. I can't remember who it was.
Why did you want to join the baseball league?
Obviously, my love of baseball.
And your tryout was in Peru, Illinois, you mentioned.
Yeah.
Could you explain the circumstances or describe a little bit about that?
Yeah. Of course, we all reported, and everybody laid down the rules. And, of course, one of them, which we all thought was hilarious, was going to a charm school by Helena Rubinstein. You ever wanted to see anybody with four left feet, that was it. Walk downstairs with books on your head. Always dress to the themes. You could not wear shorts or slacks in public. These were the kind of things, and of course how to properly sit, how to properly do this, that, and the other thing. And that was a lot of it was that. Of course, plus the normal everyday getting out there and doing your thing and hoping and praying at that point that you make the team.
And the tryouts were pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how many young ladies were trying out?
Oh, there were several hundred of them.
Did anyone accompany you to Chicago?
No.
Or Peru?
Nope.
Any other women from Milwaukee with you?
Not at that time, no. Wait, I should not really say that either because Marge Peters, who was later Rockford Peach, she was, of course, being a good friend of mine, she sticks out in my mind the best. The rest of them all seem to have come in a little bit later. But of course, like I said, I didn't last too long because of busting up my hand pretty badly.
I had read something about rules against fraternization with other opposing team players, and you mentioned that Marge Peters was a friend of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Did that affect you one way or
no,
the other?
No, we didn't see each other in public, but we certainly did otherwise. Mm-hmm. But one, to this very day, in fact, I just talked to Marge a couple of days ago. We're still friends.
Could you describe the daily routine for your practices and tryouts?
Well, we had a morning and an afternoon session. Broke for lunch, an orange and an apple and a little jug of milk, I believe it was at that point. It was quite extensive. It's just rudiments of baseball, actions as to how you behave and what's expected of you. And I said tryouts when they started slamming baseballs at you. It was something you paid attention to.
Where did you learn most of your skills, your baseball skills?
Just kind of a normal thing, you know. Some people just fall into something and that's it. And that's been the same way with me with every sport I've participated.
So there was little, is there any organization, high school organization that you
Well, I belong to the GAA, the Girls Athletic Association. And, of course, being in sports again, that was the thing. And I was a cheerleader, so all kind of put things together in a neat little package.
Okay. So how were you notified that you made the team?
At the tail end of the session, the training session, they posted the names. You are on this team, you are on this team, you are on this team. God bless you.
So, that at that point is when you found out you were on the Milwaukee team.
Right.
And how did you feel?
Rather proud.
And your family reaction?
Same thing.
Any other experiences or memories from specifically from the tryout that you can recall?
No, just basically, it was exactly what it said to be, a tryout, and work your fanny off in order to see if you could make it. It was a challenge.
Let's talk a little bit about the charm school. What were the decor classes like?
Well, like I said, learning how to walk downstairs properly and like a lady, and a behavior pattern like when you're out with other people of stature or immaterial, a way that you should behave and react as a representative of girls' baseball, because obviously most of the people that looked at girls playing baseball, this automatically put a stamp on you. You were kind of a tomboy and probably didn't have many brains to go along with it.
So how did you feel about these clubs?
I ignored it. I knew who I was and what I wanted to do, and that was important to me.
Was there any reaction from the other players?
No, not basically. Typical of any sports that you're participating in, you pull something that's rather stupid and they all come down on you and it's forgotten the next minute and they're all back to normal again. There was no grudges or anything like that. It just kept on going.
What was your reaction to the uniforms? Were they?
They were attractive. I've always been a short, stubby, pudgy person, and I didn't really feel that this was something I was going to go on display about, but it was there, you had to do it. I was a little bit petrified when I saw the shorts and realized I was going to be sliding, and I think I still have a few scars to prove that point.
Did the other players?
They'll feel more or less the same.
Do you think that the uniforms influence the fans' perception of the players or the league?
Well, that, you know, there were pros and cons of that. A lot of, naturally, most of the male people thought, well, this is a good gimmick to get the men interested in girls and vice versa. But the majority of people always thought, as I did, there's a little bit impractical. We were used to playing with the long pants and style, at least to protect a little part of you. But they were generally accepted as being quite neat looking, and they were neat, and they were very attractive.
So, getting back to the rules of conduct, did you have any problem with any of those?
No, not that I would know of. I mean, our private lives were still our own as long as we kept out of the limelight, so we could do basically whatever we felt like doing. As long as you didn't get caught doing it, of course.
Any other memories or perceptions about the charm school and the stress? Of femininity?
No, I don't think so. I think it was rather acceptable when you realized what they were trying to do. They were trying to purport women in sports as still ladies. And I think they made that very clear. I mean, you know, when you figure that you have a lot of farm girls that hadn't the foggiest notion, proper things to do here, there, or the other place. Not that they were dummies, but their background, I mean, you're out there doing farm animals and things. You don't think about being all dressed up with heels and makeup and all this good stuff. And I presume it was a little bit difficult for them to kind of change the way their lifestyle. But I think that's acceptable no matter which way you go.
Okay. What was the... You played in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
What was the length of the season? How many games?
I wish you wouldn't have asked that. I can't recall that at all. Like I said, I only got through about half or a little bit better than that.
Can you recall how many games per week, perhaps?
Well, it depended. Obviously, if you were on the road to another city, you would play 2, 3, 4 games or something like that, and then come back home and have a day here or a day there, and then come back and maybe play 2 games or 1 game, or whatever the traffic would bear. I don't really know what the pattern was. It was just be there. This is it.
What time of day were the games played?
Well, we had mostly sort of like twilight to early evening games. I don't recall if there were. I imagine, yeah, I would assume on weekends there were daytime games. I kind of get that a little bit confused with when I went to Chicago and played semi-pro. Because there, almost everything was a night game at double hitters on weekends.
What position did you play for the
third base?
You had a pretty good arm?
It was good at that time.
Did you sign a contract?
Mm-hmm.
And what was your salary?
We were paid, if I'm not mistaken, $150 a week.
And how did that compare to what you were making working a regular job?
It didn't even start to show, but of course back then you could trade a couple dollars here and a couple dollars there, and which made you far better than what this one was. It's not like today where you don't start talking until you're talking $15,000, $20,000, $30,000. I mean, this was actually like peanuts practically. But it was, it was, like I say, to me it wasn't a matter of the money at all. It was just, I loved the game, I wanted to play, I wanted to make something of myself, hopefully. And that was the way it happened.
We paid out weekly or bi-weekly?
Weekly.
And what did you do with the money?
Oh, well, there wasn't much chance to spend it. I think most of it, other than my ordinary living expenses that I had to have, like toothpaste and all that good stuff. And there wasn't much time for socializing, so obviously we couldn't go out and do things that would cost money. Of course, the money situation at that time was very low. Like if you went to show, like 35, 40 cents or something like that.
And of course, this is during the war.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Max Carey,
mm-hmm.
manager. What was it like being a player for Max Carey?
Fantastic. Man with solid heart. He loved the game, and he tried to teach the fine points of it just as though he were out there playing. You probably realize he was one of the prime bunters and base stealers, for which probably is the reason why I can't enjoy baseball today. Sliding into first base or sliding into a base straight head on to have your head bashed does not compute in my book. We were taught how to hook slide.
The proper way.
The proper way, as far as I'm concerned.
How would you characterize his coaching style?
He never hollered or screamed at anybody, but he made his point by saying, I do have something to say about this, and I would prefer that you listen carefully, or you may have a problem later. So it's all positive things that he did. He's a very positive man. I liked him, as you can plainly see.
So do you think his previous baseball experience had a lot to do with
a lot of yes, very much of it that had a lot to do with it, but his attitude was the thing that I think made him far more important to us than anything else.
Did he control how often you practiced?
Mm-hmm.
And how often was that?
Well, depending on our schedule. I mean, if it was a travel and play, it was just get out there early before the game and throw it around a little bit, get loosened up and things like that. There, once the games actually started, and it was a pretty full schedule that I can remember, there wasn't that much practice unless somebody really needed something on the side. Like if you were a little bit, you were not doing something quite right, and you go and say, could you kind of show me this is the right way to do this, or how could I do this a little bit better? And he was right there to tell you all about it.
Any other memories of Max Karen?
Nice looking man. He always behaved absolutely as a gentleman, which is one of the reasons why when I saw A League of Their Own, I saw Tom Hanks, was it? Max Carey would never have behaved like that. In the first place, he wouldn't be soused to the gills when he got there, or say, take over, I have to go have a drink, or whatever was going on. But that was an exaggerated 90s situation, more or less.
Did you enjoy that movie?
Yes, I did. Once I got past that first hump, but the rest of it, there was an awful lot of memorabilia in it. Getting together, sneaking out, doing things like this. We all did it. And our chaperones were fully aware of that.
Okay. Who was your chaperone?
Dottie Hunter. She was from Canada. Also the Rockford Peaches, Marie Tim, who had been a friend of ours way back when we were playing on Sandlot in West Dallas. Two very, very nice ladies.
How did your family feel when they knew there would be female chaperones for each team?
Like I say, that my mother and my dad said very little about it other than, you know, did you win and everything going well. They were interested, but not to the point of saying, no, you can't do it that way, and no, that's wrong, and that isn't the way these things should be. Because, like I said, both of my parents working as they did, I think they had far more insight into what is expected out of people in a normal family that were just, you know, housewives and husbands that went to work and came home, and that was the end of it.
This is the continuation of an interview with Vivian Sheriffs. The interview was conducted by Michael Telsrow on March 13, 1995 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the University of Milwaukee's oral history project entitled The Forgotten Champs, The Milwaukee Chicks of 1944. Tape 1, Side 2.
They're kind of like little mother hens for us in making sure that we were doing things that were supposed to be done and done properly. And just kind of hovered over us, I guess.
So a little bit like a mother.
Mm-hmm.
What was considered a characteristic of a good chaperone?
Well, for one thing, they set a beautiful example for us. I mean, they were well groomed. They were well spoken people. I guess they were. Well, I knew Marie Tim was in sports for an awful long time. She was a teacher. And I believe Dottie Hunter had almost the same background, so that they could basically understand what we were going through and, you know, get upset about something and just go to them and say, well, gee, why is this happening? Or why am I being picked on in a situation like this? And they always had a very logical and very down-to-earth explanations.
Okay. So how did they handle violations of rules and regulations?
Well, they gave you another chance. It wasn't, at that time, we never had anything real serious. Yes, occasionally sneaking out to one of the pubs that we knew so well and having a drink. We were all not into solid drinking or anything like this, but I guess it's just like any other kid on the block. You know, you're not supposed to do something. You're going to try it anyhow.
Could you explain some of these situations, perhaps?
Well, we had, when we played in West Dallas, when we were home, we did not go to our regular meeting place. We went down the block a piece. And we were just having a good time, and we were eating and having a drink and dancing and doing things like this. And then we look up, and here stands Mrs. Hunter. It would, oh. And she just said, carry on. And just walked away, just perfect lady. And the next morning she said, you know, she said, I could really hurt you girls, but she said, I wouldn't do that the first time. And believe me, we were very careful after that.
How did Max Carey get along with the chaperones?
Very well. Again, a ladies and gentlemen situation because they both do that. He too is, you know, if he would sense something that was going on with one of the girls, a personal matter or something like that, he would just talk to the chaperone and say, why don't you just have a little talk with so-and-so? I think something is bothering her and it's detracting from her being right on the field and doing what she's supposed to, kind of someplace else instead of where she should have been. And I think that was a nice rapport that they had between each other.
How did Milwaukeeans receive the check?
That's a hard question because we were so used in West Dallas to playing to crowds of 10,000 and things like this. And I don't think it was the fact that they had to pay to see us. It was just, oh, what makes them so great compared to what we saw in West Dallas? So it took a little while. It was starting to improve, but never really got off the ground, I would say. Milwaukee people, generally speaking, do not accept things right off the top. It's your same thing with your organized sports now. Unless they're a winner, you'll forget it. They're very slow to pick up on it, to say, yes, this is great, then I will back it, and these and that and the other things. Milwaukee people are not like that. They're very right along the line.
How did you feel about that?
Well, having been born here, I was kind of used to it. I thought they should have accepted us a little bit better, but then we looked at the fact we're women. This is it.
So that was something you were conscious of?
Right off the top. I think everybody could say that without qualification. It's just one of those things.
The other players, how did they feel?
Probably around the same way. We didn't let it affect us to any great extent, except you'd sit there and say, well, gee whiz, here we are working like crazy, trying to give them a good show, entertainment, and lukewarm.
When you were here in Milwaukee, did you stay at home with your parents?
Oh, yes. Yes, very definitely.
And where did you play the games?
Played at Borchardt Field.
Where was that located?
That was down on, I believe, around 7th or 8th and Chambers.
No longer there. How did you feel about sharing the stadium with the minor league?
As long as there was room for us, we were there. They didn't bother us, we didn't bother them.
Was it a nice field to play on?
It was a nice facility back in those days. Now it wouldn't stand a chance. It would be like a sand lot.
And how often did you have games here in Milwaukee?
Well, I'd say possibility of maybe 10, 12 games a month.
Do you have any idea what the average attendance at home games was?
No. It was meager, that I can tell you, but I couldn't even venture a guess.
Did your family make most of the games?
Yes, that they did.
And when you played, when they played the championship in Kenosha, did many Milwaukee fans make the...
Oh, yes. Quite a few. Of course, mostly family members interested in seeing... Are they going to make it or are they not?
And did you attend?
Mm-hmm.
How was that kind of series?
There again is a foggy memory. We did quite well by standards, you know, but you get outclassed by certain teams, just like now. You say the Toronto Blue Jays, Paul Molitor went there because it was a better team and they were going to win. Sort of written in the clouds that this is the way it was going to go. So you just went and prayed that you could do better than the next guy and hopefully beat them.
How did the Milwaukee fans feel about, or how did people in Milwaukee feel about the Chicks winning the championship?
It was kind of unbelievable to them because they didn't really think that they were going to do it. And I think between you, me, and the lamppost, I believe it was just sheer guts and wanting to prove a point. Motivation, shall we say?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any memories of that?
Not many at this point, no.
How did you travel? How did the team travel from city to city?
Well, it depended largely on where location, like if you're going to go to Kenosha or Racine or something, obviously mostly cars. But we did have buses occasionally, depending again where we were going, what the story was, if you're going to stay for a few days or what this was all about. All kind of predicated on the schedule itself.
When you were in other cities, where did you stay?
Oh, there were... Sometimes there were private homes, depending largely, again, because some of the girls maybe were from this particular city and picked up in a couple of friends here and there, and inexpensive hotels at that point.
In these private homes, how was that arranged? Who was that arranged through?
Well, like I said, if some of the girls who were involved in this were friends with these, or they'd say, well, you know, come on, Mom and Dad won't mind if you stay here, and then you, of course, cleared it with your manager, and he said it was okay, it was okay.
You described the Milwaukee fans as somewhat lukewarm. How were the fans different in other cities from Milwaukee?
Well, there again, you've got a team that is really hot-shotted. Like, again, I have to keep saying Rockford Peaches, Kenosha Comets. They are outstanding, and it's quite well accepted. Of course, we had an awful lot more competition here with the West Dallas League because that was a favorite for God knows how many years.
How long did that league, the West Dallas League, last?
Well, let's see. It was still going on when I came back. I started in the West Dallas League, like I said, when I was 14, and it was 23, I believe, when I went into this. And it did go on for another couple of years after that I can recall. Of course, it was starting to seep out. The girls getting older, dropping it. Some of them going into the pros. And it was just kind of a hit and miss then. It started to phase itself out like anything else.
What were some of the good things you recall about being on the road?
Well, I guess just the excitement of being in a different city. We didn't travel a lot as families and things like that. I mean, if you went 50 miles out in the country, you were really going traveling. So going to different cities and seeing different things, it's kind of exciting.
Call any bad things about traveling?
Not really. And you're tired, maybe, and things were not going exactly as you thought that they should if you were home. Your own comfortable bed is in comparison to something else. But generally, I think we were all kind of pleased and excited with the whole concept.
What was your favorite place or city to play?
Oh my. Yeah, I guess I could say Rockford.
Why is that?
Wide acceptance of the teams. I mean, this, the comparison alone, I think, is what made you kind of feel like, oh, wow, we're going here, and those people will really like us.
So they had a significant turnout for their games.
Mm-hmm.
So any other memories or experiences on the road that you can recall?
No, not really. was all just kind of a cut and dried issue. We were going there, we arrived there, we set ourselves up, and we started playing ball. It wasn't an awful lot of time to concern yourself with what else was going to go on.
Do you recall newspaper coverage or radio coverage?
Newspaper coverage, yeah. In fact, all the cities, including here. We played and we had our, sometimes like this, depending on what we were doing. They did a fairly good job considering, you know. Again, I have to say that the girls' baseball concept, while it was good, was not promoted like the male portion would be.
So when you were playing in this league, did you get a sense that once the war was over that things would change?
Mm-hmm. We knew it was just a matter of time. I mean, it went on a lot longer in some of the other cities that, like, you know, the Milwaukee bunch went to, I believe it was Fort Wayne. Again, a smaller city with more acceptance because there really wasn't that much to do.
Okay, what did you do with your spare time between games?
Oh, we sat around and chatted a lot. We did walk around the cities if we were out of town. Of course, when we were home, we resumed our normal pickup with our friends and chat and do this, that, and the other thing. Once more, I mean, there just wasn't an awful lot of time. Because if you weren't practicing or you weren't going to something that was happening, that you had to be there and things like this. So I think more or less like any sport, you're in your hometown or you're out of your town, there's a certain amount of things that people expect from you and you put in an appearance.
Did all of the chicks go out together?
Most of the time we did.
And can you recall any specific type of activities that you engage in?
No, I really can't. That's a little bit too far back for the memory to stretch.
How did the members of the Chicks get along with each other?
I'd say quite well. We developed friendships between each other and tried to help each other. If somebody had a bad day or something, hey, that's all right. I think as a team, they were pretty close, okay? Considering, again, that you've got girls from California, North Carolina, wherever, which is foreign to us as much as Milwaukee was foreign to them. So it was kind of, I'll introduce you to our type of culture here, and you tell me about yours.
Were you allowed to to go out on dates during the season? Is that allowed?
I don't really think so. I can't recall. Yeah, of course, I was married at that time and not interested in that, but I don't recall. Oh, occasionally someone snuck out on dates, so there was no getting around that.
And how did playing for the Milwaukee Chicks affect your personal life in relation to your husband?
Well, he was kind of excited about it because he was a coach in Los Dallas, which is how I met him. And my ex-sister-in-law was also a player. She was a pitcher on one of the teams. And it just kind of all folded in together.
How often did you talk with your friends and family when you were playing with the Milwaukee Chicks?
Not too much unless we got home. We weren't gone that long to really get upset or homesick or whatever. Only if I knew some event was coming up and that I was going to be late or wasn't going to get there at all. These are the kind of things that we obviously pick up a telephone and say, hey mom, guess what, I'm not going to be there for your anniversary.
What was the most difficult change in your personal life or social life while you were playing with the Milwaukee Chicks?
Losing sight of some of my old-time friends who are not baseball players, obviously, but had watched a lot of it. And the shift that when you were all done playing, that you couldn't just relax and maybe put on a pair of blue jeans and run around town or do something like that. It was restrictive to that point.
Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the season again. And specifically, what did you think about the quality of the season that Milwaukee had? The quality of the baseball that was played?
I don't know. Of course, like everything else, if you're winning, it's too short, and if you're losing, it's too long.
Well, how about the quality of your play that year?
Well, like I said, I gave everything I had, and if it wasn't enough, there wasn't much more I could do about it. I didn't slack off. Okay, you have your days, just like in the workforce, you have the same problem. One day you're gung-ho and you can do everything right, and the next day, no matter what you pick up, is wrong.
How did you injure your hand?
I sort of caught, I think it was the base and the ball and everything else all at one time. I just rammed it, and fingers went kapooey.
And that put you out for the season?
Yeah.
Did that... Well, that did not end your baseball career.
It ended it as far as the Milwaukee Chicks are concerned, because obviously, I mean, they had Doris Tetzla from Watertown standing in the wings, so she came in and took over. Then when I came back to Milwaukee, after being told there was a possibility I was going to lose a couple fingers, because these are broken in four places, this way and this way. They said it this way, and then it went the other direction. So I had been told that, and I wasn't buying it. So in the meantime, I had some friends who had gone to Chicago to play semi-pro ball. And I kept in good touch with them, gone to visit them. They said, what happened? I told them. I said, this guy wants to amputate. And then, no way, we have a very good doctor here. And that was it. And then I just got on the team there, and I played for the Chicago Bluebirds and had a ball doing that another couple of years.
What league did the Bluebirds play in?
That was, I don't know, they just called it a semi-pro league. I don't really know if it had a league name or not.
That was a Chicago league?
Yeah, I played for the Chicago Bluebirds. But at that, we played evening games and weekend games, and we were all provided the opportunity to have a job. And our backer, Mr. Charlie Bidwell, he got jobs for most of us. I worked at Keisha Motor Express.
Was there any competition between that league and?
No, I don't think so. Chicago, too. I mean, you have to realize Chicago is quite a town for sports and things of that kind. And they, of course, had they had a lot of teams like the New Orleans Jacks and ones like this that came into town, and it was quite exciting. And an entirely different version of the baseball game itself that we were playing. And the people in Chicago were gung-ho. We had crowds there like you wouldn't believe. Again, I think it's the acceptance of Milwaukee as compared to Chicago.
During the championship game against the Kenosha Comets, how did the team feel?
Well,
they feel confident.
Yeah, they're confident to an extent. It's hard to say. I mean, you can go into a game and say, "Oh, come on, we can do this," which we did. So we can do this. But deep down inside of you, you think, oh, wow, where's the team again?
How did it feel to have to play a seven-game playoff in Kenosha and not in Milwaukee?
Well, actually, being as close in context really wasn't too much of a difference.
Talk a little bit about the war. Did you see your role as a professional baseball player as being patriotic?
Really? I kind of figure it was entertainment for anybody and everybody.
When playing for the Chicks, did you feel you were contributing to the war effort in any particular way?
I don't think so. I figured my husband was contributing.
So there was no connection?
I don't really feel there was. That's my own personal opinion, but I couldn't see where it was furthering anything one way or the other except providing entertainment.
What were other kinds of things that you or your teammates did that might have contributed to the war effort?
Well, they started an organization here in Milwaukee. It was called the Navy Girls. Contrary to the fact my husband was in the Army, I went into that pretty suddenly. And it was just an entertainment venture again. Nothing gala about it. It wasn't dating, and it was just being at the meeting place, which was down at 26 in Wisconsin, if I can remember correctly. And it was a Legion Hall of some kind. And they'd have parties, out-of-town guys that kind of didn't know what else to do. We'd come, we'd dance, and have donuts and coffee and soda pop and all this good stuff.
A little bit like the UFO?
More or less, except on a different plane, of course.
What did you think the role of women was during the war? Did you take notice of any particular...
Well, a lot of them did finally find out that they had to stand on their own two feet. As far as job situation, obviously, that had opened up to the women. Some of them went in with it, well, okay, this is joy, I'll pick up a couple of bucks while so-and-so's in service, and it's going to end. It's, you know, it was an affirmative yet a negative attitude when you really came down to it. Because nobody really knew how long or what this was going to entail, and how things would be when they got back. Are we going to be here? Or, well, we all decided, no, it wasn't going to last that long.
Well, how did that change in the post-war years?
Well, I think the only thing was, at that point, like I said, I came back and started to play ball. Chicago, and then I even came in and played slow pitch ball here in the city because I didn't really want to get out of it at that point. But I paid a little bit more attention to, I think, my friends and working and just kind of resuming the life that I had.
Did any of your family outside of your husband participate in the service in the war?
Well, my ex-sister-in-law, she is, at the present time, I believe, a lieutenant commander in the Army Nurses Corps. She took it on as a full-time job. Of course, by now, I would presume she's possibly retired, too. She's a little bit older than I am.
Dorothy McGuire, do you recall?
Dottie, yeah.
Thought she had lost her husband in the war. And how did the team react?
Tea and sympathy. We all kind of felt for each other because a lot of us were married and had husbands, and the other girls that weren't, they were just very sympathetic.
Did any other teammates lose a friend or family member, you recall?
I can't recall if they did. I'd heard someplace along the line that a couple of them had brothers or something like that, but I can't pinpoint it because I really don't remember it that well.
How did the manager and chaperone handle that news?
Very sympathetic, very helpful. Like I said, they were kind of like moms and dads. You know, your own family wasn't there, and you got to have somebody to lean on. You're not going to cry to your teammates, obviously.
What was Milwaukee like during the war years?
Basically, it was life as usual, except, of course, for the rationing and that sort of nonsense that went on at that point. But everybody just conformed. I mean, it was there. What are you going to do about it? There was nothing in our power to change it one way or the other.
Were you fairly confident that things would turn out well?
Yeah. I'm a very optimistic person to start out with. I always feel things are going to turn out well. When they don't, I say, oh, well, somebody else did it.
Okay, so after 1944, you didn't move with the Chicks to Grand Rapids. You went to play in Chicago.
Right.
How did you feel about leaving the Milwaukee Chicks?
I was a little bit disappointed, but I realized full well there wasn't much I could do about it. And then I first got all wound up in Chicago with a couple of my former West Dallas teammates, and a couple of them were in the pros and got out. And it was just pick up business as usual.
So there were a number of young ladies from West Dallas that played elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Was, let's see, as I say, Marge Peters, Jackie Von Garden, Betty Machinsky, Ellen Trenier, who was originally from Milwaukee, although she lives in some of the Berg now, I guess. These are the people that, well, I'm still involved with them. We go out to lunch every couple months or so. So it's just a friendship that lasted. I mean, we have things in common. Our lives are not the same. I don't see them maybe other than, I do talk to Marge Peters quite frequently because she and I have buddies from way back when we were little kids.